afternoon. This is the professor, Dr. Ron Daniels, president of the Institute of the Black World 21st Century and distinguished lecturer emeritus from York College, City University of New York. I welcome you to this March 15th edition of Vantage Point here on 99.5 FM. That's WBAI on the Pacifica Network. On the Pacifica Network in collaboration with ycradio.org. That's right, the York College radio community is plugged in online. Well, today begins a three-part series of what I call Phenomenal Black Women, and that will last for the next 3 weeks. That's in recognition of Women's History Month. But before we go to our guest for today, I just have to continue to go back to our relentless request that people be disciplined. We're just about 1 year, a few days beyond 1 year. That's right. It's been 1 year. We've been dealing with this coronavirus, and it has been hell. But here in New York, we've done a reasonably good job, and many people around the country have. But the question is, we must remain disciplined. There is light at the end of the tunnel. President Biden has said, July 4th, people may be able to go out and, you know, and have those picnics in the backyard. I call it Frederick Douglass Day, by the way. But that gives some hope. And certainly by the summer, things should approach some reasonable proximity of normality. I think for a while, we're probably going to be doing these masks, getting more vaccinations and so forth. But we certainly should be liberated. So I just want to continue to ask us to look out for each other, take care of each other, and be disciplined. What's happening with spring break is not likely to be helpful. And some of these reckless governors who just are, you know, just believing whatever they want to believe, and it's just insanity. But hopefully, you know, people will listen, and the vast majority of people, again, will be disciplined. It is a season where we're going to be dealing with the trauma. Post-COVID, post-coronavirus trauma for quite some time. And that's why the Institute of the Black World 21st Century and with this Black Family Summit has established the Community Cares Listening Line. I heard the other day, they're talking about mass trauma syndrome. They talked about what happened after World War II. And the number of people who have passed away is greater than any of all these wars combined. So people are going to be suffering for a while. And there's still issues now. Your children go to school, whether or not to go to school. There's just so much pressure out there. But that's why we have a Community Cares listening line, which you can dial into in order to have a sympathetic, culturally appropriate listener. That's right, listen to you. And if there is a need for counseling of any kind, child abuse, domestic abuse, alcoholism, drug addiction, suicidal feelings, just intense anxiety, the listeners will refer you to, again, a culturally appropriate professional service in order to aid you along. And I must say, as we have said over and over again, we've gotten great response by way of our partnership with WBAI on this matter. So if you need help, you have people who are prepared to listen, 877-327-6677. That's 877-327-6677. And I'll talk about that later in the show, because we're going to open up the lines later on to just get your opinions on identifying a phenomenal Black woman and tell us why. But now we want to go all the way to Kingston, Jamaica, for our phenomenal woman of the day, and that is Dr. Vereen Shepherd. Dr. Vereen Shepherd is the director of the Center for Reparations Research at the University of West Indies in Kingston, Jamaica. She also serves as the vice chairperson of the CARICOM Reparations Commission. Dr. Vereen Shepherd, welcome again to Vantage Point. Dr. Shepherd, are you there?
I'm here.
I can hardly hear you. The volume is very low. It sounds like we may have a bad connection.
All right. So I'll try to get in contact with her again.
Okay. All right. Well, Dr. Vereen Shepherd is a phenomenal Black woman. And again, for the next 2 weeks, that's what we'll be doing. In preparation, at the bottom of the hour, You can prepare to call in because we're going to ask you, who is your phenomenal black woman, or to identify someone that you think is a phenomenal black woman and tell us why. It could be a famous person, maybe not so famous, famous person, maybe somebody in your family. That's going to be your choice, and we're going to open the phones for that purpose. I did want to note that today, 56 years ago, actually, it was Lyndon B. Johnson who went before a joint session of the Congress of the United States, and that was after Bloody Sunday, and he talked about the need for what became the Voting Rights Act of 1965. Lyndon B. Johnson, a Southerner from Texas, had the audacity, the courage. Of course, as you note from the film Selma, there was a kind of creative tension that he welcomed in order of pushing him to make this decision. And certainly the Bloody Sunday where, you know, the marchers, including John Lewis and Mrs. Boynton and many others were just trampled and brutally beaten on that bridge, sent images around the world, which certainly gave a kind of moral position to raise this issue, because since post-Reconstruction, black people have been essentially systematically disenfranchised, particularly in the South, but also in other parts of the country as well, but particularly in the South. So it was on this day that Lyndon Baines Johnson, LBJ, went before the Congress of the United States, and he made his famous words were at the end of that speech, "And we shall overcome," a really very courageous speech by Lyndon Baines Johnson 56 years ago today. Reparations is very much in the news, and I'm sure we're going to, our topic, by the way, today is Caribbean women. And Caribbean women and reparatory justice. That's why we wanted to shed some light on this particular matter. Dr. Vereen Shepherd has written a very, very informative article, which I found fascinating, just talking about, the role that women in the Caribbean have played and played in the struggle. So we're waiting to connect with her. Hopefully we'll get a good connection to Kingston, Jamaica, and be able to conduct the interview. So we're standing by to make that connection. One of the things that she references in the article, which I found quite interesting, I was going to ask this about this. It says, in the life and times of Frederick Douglass, his book in 1882, abolitionist and formerly enslaved man, Frederick Douglass remarked, "When the true history of the anti-slavery cause shall be written, women will occupy a large space in its pages. For the cause of the slave has been peculiarly women's cause. Not only did her feet run on willing errands, and her fingers do the work, which in large degree supplied the sinews of the war, but deep moral convictions found convincing and persuasive expression by her pen and her voice." Again, speaking to the fact that Frederick Douglass was very appreciative of the role that women played in the abolitionist movement, and Dr. Vereen Shepherd is indicating that is similarly the true in terms of reparatory justice throughout the Caribbean. So we're again waiting to hopefully get a good connection to Kingston, Jamaica, where, again, she is the director of the Center for Reparations Research and also the vice chairperson of the CARICOM Reparations Commission. You may be aware that in 2014, the nations of the Caribbean, all of them, all 15, came together to demand reparations from the former colonial powers for Native genocide and African enslavement. I mean, that was really a bold position, given the fact that essentially many of them, you might say, are neo-colonies. They're still dependent upon these former colonial powers that created, as Professor Hilary Beckles has described, a mess a mess that is not just, I mean, that under, that is an understatement, a brutal mess that has underdeveloped and kept these islands in very, very difficult strait for generations. That as a result of that, there was formed a CARICOM Reparations Commission. And that CARICOM Reparations Commission has created a 10-point reparations program. Moreover, what happened was the nations were asked to also form commissions. And I think 11 or 12 out of the 15 actually have active functioning reparations commission. And the National African American Reparations Commission was definitively inspired by the formation of the CARICOM Reparations Commission. And of course, you heard it right here on these airways. In 2015, in April, really, coming up, the anniversary, sixth anniversary is coming up, we had a historic gathering of the CARICOM Reparations Commission and the newly formed National African American Reparations Commission right here in New York. And, of course, the National African American Reparations Commission has its 10-point program as well and is moving also to mobilize in a major way around H.R. 40, which is on the brink, frankly, of becoming law, and working to certify local initiatives like Evanston, Illinois. If you Google Evanston, Illinois, you will see Evanston on March 22nd is about to award the first reparations payments to local residents, the first of its kind here in these United States of America. So the National African American Reparations Commission has been working synergistically with CARICOM and is moving forward in a very decisive way. So no luck yet in reaching Professor. We have her?
Let's try.
Oh, okay. Well, it's unfortunate that we don't
have her. Let's try it now.
Oh, we do have her? That's what I'm saying. We have her.
That's what I'm saying.
Okay, all right. Well, Dr. Rain Shepherd, welcome to Vantage Point.
Thank you so much, my brother, and I'm so sorry for the bad connection earlier on. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Now that I have a phenomenal black woman on the line from the Caribbean, I am doing absolutely fine. So let's get right into our interview. I've given a lot of background that you may have heard because
I was listening to you, and I have to say thank you for that. That title, wow, I'm kind of stunned to be called a phenomenal black woman, but thank you so much.
Well, you are a phenomenal black woman because, again, you head the Center for Reparations Research and you're vice chair of the CARICOM Reparations Commission. But before I want to talk to her, I've given that background, but just give us a little bit, because I'm aware of your work and you're global. You're often in Geneva. You're doing work with the United Nations. But what is it in your life that, in your background, that inspired you to become such an incredible activist?
Well, before going into any of that, I think I need to, just thank my ancestors on whose shoulders I stand, because actually that's why I'm in the movement. I have committed myself to the reparation movement because of Kuba, Mimba, Sue, Delia, Wanika, who were enslaved on the property that 200 years courtesy of government landscape became the District of Africa, St. Mary, in which I grew up. And my great-grandfather, I've discovered, was Alexander Mighty, and he was born into slavery in an adjoining parish to mine in 1829. And I honor the Tikar people of Cameroon who were forcefully taken to Jamaica and to whom I am connected on my mother's side. So I have to honor those ancestors, because it is their experience, it's my knowledge of them, it's the knowledge I gained from studying history, and the discrimination I faced growing up in a district called Africa because of the stereotype about our continent of Africa that really got me thinking about historical wrongs and how we can actually, call on like-minded people, advocates, to work for the appeasement of the torture through reparatory justice of all these ancestors who I salute today. I think about Aunt James, Francis, Duncan, Jenny, Eliza, and Jane Whittingham. All of them were hanged. These women were hanged in 1832 because they stood up for justice. So, my brother, I can't help but being in the movement, and that's the kind of background I have.
Right. Well, that's very informative and very instructive. Give us a quick word about the mission of the Center for Reparations Research, which you not only chair, but had a great deal to say about in terms of shaping its vision and mission.
Yes. Well, it was established officially. It was launched officially in 2017. And it's an initiative both of the University of the West Indies and the heads of government of CARICOM. Because having established the CARICOM Reparation Commission, they wanted a research center that would conduct research and inform the advocacy of the movement, you know, and to also join with other reparation centers and other history departments and activists, civil society, in order to advance the movement. So we are both a research arm of the CRC, as well as we engage in the dissemination of research and advocacy. And you mentioned my work at the United Nations. Yes, since 2015, I've been the CARICOM member, so to speak, of the Committee on the Elimination of Racial Discrimination. Before that, I was chair of the Working Group of Experts on People of African Descent. It was under my chairship that we lobbied and got the Decade for People of African Descent, and I helped to craft the program of activities of the International Decade. So I'm very proud of the work that, you know, we have done, both in the working group and on CERD in terms of advancing the Decade for People of African Descent. So, yes, I try to work on all fronts. I'm also a member of the Reparation Council in Jamaica. I have a radio program called Talking History, and I have a segment on that, which is Reparation Corner. So I try to work on all fronts to advance the case for repatriate justice, and also in this month to bring awareness of what women went through and why women of conscience must become a part of the reparation movement today.
Well, that anticipates my next question. And by the way, that's why all of what you just said is why you are a phenomenal Black woman. So you can't disclaim it. I am anointing you such. But anyway, you've already anticipated my next question. Why did you write this really very, very informative article, which is entitled Caribbean Women and Reparatory Justice?
Well, thank you, you know, for having read it and giving me this opportunity, because, and I have to thank the Daily Gleaner of Jamaica, because some months ago they came out and said that they support the reparatory justice movement, and they gave the reason. So I wrote to them and I said, well, having come out like this, why not give us a column, give the center a column, so that we can, you know, show your interest by disseminating information. And they responded positively. We have a column every 2 weeks in the Sunday Gleaner, which is amazing. So we submit articles every other week to the Gleaner for reparation conversation. The column is called. So because of March being embraced as Women's History Month, I decided that, you know, I really should kick off March with an article about women, but also directed at women, many of whom hesitate about joining the reparation movement. And I thought, well, if you know what your ancestors went through, there's no way you can stay aloof from the movement. So this article was to present the evidentiary basis of women's involvement in and profit from African misery, and as a rationale for an appeal for women of conscience to become more active in this movement.
And so would you just be kind enough to just share, you know, one or two of the stories? I mean, it's just so powerful. So can you just give us a couple of examples of sort of vignettes of some of the women that you talk about in this very powerful article?
But I heard you, you know, mention the way in which I kicked off the article by a quote from Frederick Douglass, you know,
from
1882, because a lot of people don't understand the role that women played in history. And he's the one who talked about when the true history of the anti-slavery cause shall be written, women will occupy a large space in its pages. And while it's based, you know, his quote is about the United States, we here embrace that because it's true. I mean, Hillary Beckles, one of those who wrote about women's condition, and Lucille Mastrin-Mayer, and I salute all these pioneers who have allowed us to know about women's history in the Caribbean. I mean, Hillary Beckles said, mapping the itinerary of gender and Caribbean history enables us to sharpen or focus specifically on slavery as a constantly changing system of socio-sexual exploitation and control of women, and to penetrate its internal dynamism as a mode of labor extraction, which can be seen in the political economy of enslavement. And so one of the reasons I like the quote from Frederick Douglass so much is that it tells us that there's an old narrative about the anti-slavery activists and the abolitionists in our history on all sides of the Atlantic. We hear about Granville Sharp, Henry Fox, William Wilberforce, and so on. And we even hear about Queen Victoria and Knight, Mary Burkett, Hard, and so on. But we don't know about women like Catherine Brown. So I'm calling some of their names who were in the anti-slavery struggle. And if women were in the anti-slavery struggle, it means that women were experiencing oppressive regimes that they wanted to destabilize. So Catherine Brown was sentenced to death in 1832 because she participated in the final war of emancipation. It was later commuted to 50 lashes and 6 weeks in prison. But some were not so lucky. I mean, and when I say lucky, that is, you know, quote unquote, because 50 lashes, who survived that? But Anne James was executed. And so was Francis Duncan, Eliza James, and also Eliza Whittingham. And, you know, so these women were, their names must be known. Because sometimes we just say, oh, women, and they're like faceless beings. But we want to say that we must destabilize this myth. And, of course, Lucille Mastrin-Mayer has helped us to destabilize this myth. And Hillary Beckles in his work, Natural Rebels, by saying women, the burden of enslavement, production and reproduction fell disproportionately on women. And because of their plantation experience, that's why they took up arms in the cause of Caribbean freedom. And their reproductive lives were controlled, especially after 1807 when Britain passed the Abolition Act. They knew they were not supposed to involve themselves in the trafficking. So they controlled women's bodies so that women would now bear the burden of reproducing new enslaved Africans to be in the system. So we have to honor these women. So the names I called, and you have others. Nana of the Jamaican Maroons. You have Sally Bassett of Bermuda. You have Mary Prince. You know, all these women who left records of what happened and the sexual violence that they endured. So we have to use Women's History Month to talk about their experiences and to say to women, hey, women owned them too, and women profited from compensation, you know, and therefore we have a right to celebrate these women and to be in the movement because of them.
Right. Well, we want to tell people that people can go to the website ibw21.org, ibw21.org, and you can actually find this article and you can actually read it, Caribbean Women and Reparatory Justice. And she also referenced, and you can Google this as well, The Rebel Women by Professor Sir Hillary Beckles.
Yes, so Natural Rebels by Professor Hillary Beckles and Rebel Women by Lucille Mastrin-Mayer.
Okay, all right. Thank you for that correction. Now, let me just go to my next question, which I think you've already anticipated as well. What implications does this article, this revelation of the incredible and powerful role that women played in abolition and around issues of reparatory justice for today's struggle? What lessons, what should we learn that is applicable today?
So we have to put together a case to justify the demand for reparation. In putting together the case, you have to find evidence. And women's experiences must be cataloged, researched, cataloged, and form part of the evidence which we will use to say to the former colonizing powers, you could not have done this and just expect to escape. When you read something like this in Orlando Patterson's Sociology of Slavery, and I quote, "The sexual exploitation of female slaves by white men was the most disgraceful aspect of Jamaican slave society. Rape and the seduction of infant slaves, the ravishing of the common law wives of male slaves under the threat of punishment and outright sadism, often involving the most heinous forms of sexual torture, were the order of the day." And there are so many other instances, so much evidence that Thomas Thistlewood, Robert Wedderburn, and everyone has left about what happened to women. Then when you read that the enslavers were rewarded for their brutality with compensation, then you have to say, no, we can't stand back and say, well, you know, just a few people, activists out there, you know, talking about reparation, but it has no evidentiary basis, and these things were too long ago. Because it's not too long ago, because the psychological damage has been done. There is an intergenerational transmission of trauma. Joy DeGruy talks about, you know, the psychological impact of slavery and the transmission of the syndrome, you know. So we have to say it's not long in the past. Some people talk about, you know, the theory of distance, as if with time these things go away and the legacy is not felt. The legacy is obvious. Look around us today in this pandemic. Look at the discrimination, the inequality in how people are able to cope with the trauma of, and I heard you talk about that, of the pandemic. It is the trauma is with us. And you look around the Caribbean, you see the deficiencies in education, in health, in all aspects of the social infrastructure. They owe us because our ancestors were brutalized and their descendants are living with the trauma. And right. Somebody has to take responsibility.
Right. And so I guess finally, it would be helpful to know you are the vice chairperson of the CARICOM Reparations Commission. And I know there's a lot. I mean, reparations is on fire in the United States. I understand that there was just a meeting of CARICOM where there was new energy injected in terms of a sense of urgency that the Prime Minister of Barbados, in particular, who happens to be a woman, is just insisting that this movement has to move forward. Professor Hillary Beckles has said that reparations is the human rights issue of the 21st century. So give us a sense of where the CARICOM and the Caribbean reparations movement stands. What's happening? How are the demands yes. being met by Europe? So just give yes. our audience a kind of update.
Okay, well, our strategy is the 10-point action plan for reparatory justice, as you mentioned. And so the strategy has to be implemented. And there is a prime ministerial subcommittee headed by Honorable Mayor Markley. So they met this prime ministerial subcommittee, which is the interface between the CARICOM Reparation Commission and the heads of government, met. And also, reparation was placed on the agenda of the last CARICOM meeting. And I tell you, you are correct. All heads of governments recommitted their support and energy around the demand for reparatory justice. They emphasized and re-emphasized the just nature of the claim that it's not too long ago in the past that somebody did this to our ancestors and somebody must make amends, come back and clean up what Professor Beckles talks about as a colonial mess. They also, those who had not established reparation committees, committed to establish committees. In fact, Trinidad and Tobago, their committee had sort of lapsed. But now it has been reestablished, you know? So there's new energy, new commitment, and plans to lobby to ensure we have a support from the Africa Union, to have a summit, lobby for a summit, because our leaders in the first instance are saying, let's negotiate. Let's not go to the ICJ. Let's not use the Committee on the Elimination of Racial Discrimination yet. Let's not go to the General Assembly yet. Let us negotiate. So they are calling for a summit, and they called for this before. The Center for Reparation Research had to draft the letters to European governments in the first instance to say, this is what you did. This is what we're saying that your responsibility is. Let us meet. Those who wrote back did not agree to a meeting. And in fact, most of them, you know, more or less gave the impression, well, it's not our fault. So we have redrafted those letters, and the heads of government have recommitted to using the 10-point action plan and new energy, more committees, more public discussions to ensure that we go forward. And we have a big webinar coming up on the 25th of March, which, as your audience might know, is the UN International Day of Remembrance of the Victims of Slavery and the Transatlantic Trafficking in Enslaved Africans. And you'll hear more about that because we're in the planning stage right now. We have a big webinar coming up to bring attention to that day, because that's the day that they boast about in England as the day they passed the act to abolish the transatlantic trafficking. However, it didn't end in 1807. It didn't end in 1808. Ships were coming to the Caribbean up to 1811 and 1822. So it's a bit of hypocrisy. And you can't boast about that and then wash your hands of the consequences. So there's new energy. We have a schools lecture series going on. It will end in August. And the last Thursday of every month since last year, October, we have been having these lectures to educate the children. Because Caribbean history is not mandatory in schools, lobbying to make that happen. But we are, in the meantime, the center is taking the initiative to educate the children of the region so that they know what is the essence of this reparatory justice movement. So we are moving on, my brother, and I know you are behind us, and we are also in support of what you are doing.
Well, I wanted to ask you about that. To what degree, because we certainly have looked very closely, and you've been invited and have come to attend the Congressional Black Caucus sessions, and Prime Minister Gonzalez sent the foreign minister, Camilo Gonzalez, 1 year. Professor Beckles came. In fact, CARICOM, Reparations Commission, recently submitted a statement. We just had another hearing on H.R. 40 that was put apart and put in the record. Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee was elated to get it, and she referred to it publicly in the hearing. So I'm wondering, to what degree is the movement around H.R. 40, for example, in this country, but also the sort of the post-George Floyd explosion in the streets, you know, has sort of impacted what's going on in the Caribbean? And for that matter, the degree to which the reparations movement is kind of blossoming in these colonial countries themselves, to begin to push those governments in a way that one might not have anticipated.
Yes. Well, you see, it took too long for us to re-energize this reparation movement. I honor my Rastafari brethren for actually trying to keep it going, but not many people were supporting them. And we weren't able to get, you know, private sector, churches, and so on board. But now, many more people are aboard, on board, and they have seen the commitment of the recommitment of governments. And we have had so many dissemination for us. I think it's galloping, and also we are quite a bit there. And there were, you know, so many statements and also public events to bring solidarity in terms of the Black Lives Matter movement and what happened to Breonna Taylor and George Floyd and so many others. So the awareness is in the Caribbean. But I would say that there are certain sectors of course, the establishment, people who perhaps benefited from enslavement, and there's a reluctance of some of them to, of course, admit their association and to join the movement. But it's time, I think, will take care of that. And we are quite aware of HR 40. As you say, the Caricom Reparation Commission has been supportive. And the national committees have been having events. Certainly the National Council of Jamaica has been quite active. And what we have started here is a conversation with Africa, because we believe that once Africa gets on board in a big way, then it will be a, you know, it will be very good for the global reparation movement. So we are quite aware, but we are also lobbying to get greater interest from the schools. We had a youth rally, of course. We had a reparation relay right around the island. COVID-19 has put a kind of dent in some of those activists, some of those activities. But we're using social media, using the opportunity of online e-conversations to get even wider audiences to some of the things that we're doing. So it is a global movement, and we have seen what's happening in the United States, what's happening in the UK, and we are bringing enlightenment to our people about even some of those statues that are falling in the UK. Some of those were investors and factors down here during slavery. So we're trying to say the movements are not unconnected. What's happening in the Black Lives Matter campaign, what's happening with activists in the UK, they are not unconnected to what's happening down here. And we join hands across the world in this movement for justice. It is justice, and that's what we're striving for.
Well, finally, wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. Would you be so kind to just share information how people can be in touch with the Center for Reparations Research, so that people can plug in and get information?
Yes. Happy to. And I want to publicly thank Gabriel Hemmings, Floyd Williams, Ahmed Reed, and of course, John Shorter, who work with me in the center, some full-time, some part-time. We can be contacted at +1-876-970-2646. And the email address is reparations.research@uwimona.edu.jm. So we'll be happy to hear from people. We hear from people all the time. We have a magazine, we have a newsletter, and we put out something called Sankofa every other Wednesday in our network. If you want to be a part of our network, please get in touch so you can get on our mailing list and you can be kept informed about what's happening. And remember, the Reparation Corner, which is on my program Talking History, that comes on 9 to 11 a.m. on every Saturday on Nationwide 90FM. People can pick us up on. We use that too to help to publicize what's going on in the world of reparation.
Yeah, I've been honored. I've been privileged to be a guest, I think, on a couple of occasions, so I really appreciate that.
Absolutely. From you being a guest on Talking History. Yeah.
Right, that's right. Well, would you go through the email address slowly one more time?
Okay, we'll do. So reparations.research@uwimona.edu.jm.
Okay, all right. Well, I hope people got that, and we hope that you get some
audience. Yes.
That you,
but, you know, I want to thank you very much and to just emphasize that those who commit crimes against humanity, those who harm people and must engage in repair, and the 10-point action plan is a strategy for that repair. It's not about a simple cash payout, which everyone will get something. Everyone will benefit because it's a development plan.
Right.
A development plan, money to ensure we are put back on a path where we can say we are equal partners. We are not right now.
Right. Well, Dr. Vereen Shepherd, the phenomenal Black woman, we really appreciate you being
Thank
the first
so
in a three-part series, and we look forward to hearing from you more and more in the future. So thank you so much for spending time
thank
with us
so
on
much.
Vantage Point this afternoon. All right. Okay. That was Dr. Vereen Shepherd, and I hope you appreciated that interview. We had some little difficulties at the beginning, but we got over it, and I thought it was very – by the way, you can see the article that we're referencing on the IBW website. It is Caribbean Women and Reparatory Justice. It is an incredible article. It really is. It's really great, a great article. So now we want to get your reactions to the interview. But equally important, since we're talking about phenomenal Black women, we want you to call, take this opportunity. This is Women's History Month, and I have a three-part series. We have a guest next week and a guest after that, and we hope they're all going to be great, as Dr. Vereen Shepherd has certainly set the tone. So 212-209-2877, 212-209-2877, you can call and you can identify your phenomenal Black woman. It could be, again, a relative, someone in the community, it could be someone famous or not so famous, doesn't really matter. Why do you see this particular person as a phenomenal Black woman? That's what we're looking for. So 212-209-2877, 212-209-2877. We just have about 10 minutes or so, so you can get in immediately if you call right now to Vantage Point here on WBAI 99.5 FM on the Pacifica Network, again, in collaboration with YCRadio.org. Once again, just want to share with you the information that we have the listening community cares listening line that we talked about before. Even though we're making great progress, see light at the end of the tunnel, that trauma is going to be with us a while. Particularly among some of the children. I'm just listening to some of the, just how devastating it's been not to be able to go to schools. The online learning, and we are social beings, and the inability to just interact. And then, it's just really, really been devastating. And it's been particularly hard on communities of colors, Black and brown people in particular, and also essential workers, who just had to go out there and do this work and take the risk and worry about it and all that anxiety. So that's why we have this Community Cares listening line where you can call. It's confidential. It's anonymous. You don't have to give up your name or any of that kind of thing. This is just this designed to be, when we say culturally appropriate, it means people who are like you. I mean, we have people from the Caribbean. We have people from Africa. We have people from Haiti. We have people, from all over who are available to talk with you and to listen, really. But if you need assistance, you can also be directed to a place where you can get the appropriate professional care. It, too, will be on a culturally appropriate basis. 877-327-6677 is the number to call. 877-327-6677. You've heard us talk about it. We had a guest. Dr. Zakiya Newland is the project director. She was on a couple of weeks ago. Things are moving. We're really delighted to be able to offer that kind of service because it is so urgently needed. 877-327-6677 is the number to call. In the meantime, we just have a few more minutes. If there's someone who wants to call and give us your phenomenal Black woman as a part of Vantage Point's salute to Women's History Month, you can call 212-209-2877. That's 212-209-2877. I'd like to get a couple of callers in. There's got to be somebody out there who wants to call the professor and give a shout out to a phenomenal Black woman at 212-209-2877. You don't have to wait. You can get in right away if you call right now. And again, I've elected to do this because, quite frankly, one of the things that has happened historically in relationships to the women's movement and whatever, great movement historically. But very often women of color have been, you know, have had to take a back seat. You know, I put out a piece yesterday on Sojourner Truth. I mean, Sojourner Truth had to just rise up. She's fighting against abolition. She's supporting the women's suffrage movement, and she's not being respected in that movement in a way that she should have been respected. And so she, in a very famous speech, said, look, you know, she talked about the work that she was doing, and she said, ain't I a woman? She's basically saying, look at me. I am black. I am African. I am a woman also. And we have seen that, unfortunately, play out. It's gotten better, but even in more recent times, you know, there have been indications of even when they had the Women's March a couple of years, they had to work through some of these issues of making sure that indeed black women would be respected. Let's go to our listening. Let's go to our audience now. Good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point. Could you speak up just a little bit?
Yes, my name is Lucy. Good afternoon.
Oh, good afternoon. I hear you much better now.
Yes, I'm just calling to say thank you for this show. It's beautiful. And please, I would like the audience to support every bit of it. I'm a woman, and I'm trying to reach out to the other women to also support this. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you so much. Really appreciate that encouragement. Others can call. We have about 5 minutes left, but that's enough time for a couple of people to call at 212-209-2877. 212-209-2877. As I said before, obviously, I am strongly support the women's movement, but there's a way in which, you know, it's been important to also speak specifically to the aspirations of black women, you know, who had to, and I must say internally very often had to deal with patriarchy, had to deal with some issues even internally. And a lot of times black men get upset because somehow or another there's a feeling that these issues ought not to be talked about, but they have to be talked about because in addition to racism, there's an infusion of sexism within the context of a patriarchal society. And so we've had to deal with some internal issues as well. So black women have borne the brunt. And of course, we've seen in this most recent election, black women taking the lead, fraternities, sorority sisters, and people with different civic organizations, and just average people saying, we on this, we are going to do this, and having a tremendous success at it. So 212-209-2877. Again, we got a couple of more minutes left. If people would like to, someone else would like to call and give us a, identify a person that you see as a phenomenal black woman. I think about Regent Adelaide Sanford. You know, what a phenomenal black woman. Dr. Adelaide Sanford and Queen Mother, Dr. Adelaide Sanford, on the Board of Regents for so many years. I mean, fighting for education of black children and fighting to indeed talk about black culture and telling us that we are beautiful and we're strong and we're resilient and just standing in there in a way that is just so incredible and elegant. And she's now over 90 years old and still fighting. That is an example. But, you know, there are also people who just, you know, who are doing things in the community who may not have famous names. We need to be upholding women in the way that they have served and led in so many different movements. We look at the history of the civil rights movement. You know, we know about Fannie Lou Hamer, but one of her sidekicks was a woman named Annie Devine. Annie Devine, we you know, look her up. You know, I've been doing this thing lately. Is if you don't know, you should know, and you know, check out these women. Let's go. I think we have another caller. Let's go. Good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point.
Hello.
Hello. You're on the line.
Yeah. Hello.
Yeah. You're on.
Okay. Yo. Oh, I would like to say my wife is a phenomenal woman. You know.
Yes.
Gave me two beautiful kids. They sent them both. They both went to college. They both are excelling in their career field, and she is too. And she stuck by me while I was going through my changes. So we've been together for 60 years almost.
Wow, how wonderful.
I would like to ask you a question, though, about reparations. How is it that now we have more PhDs and doctor's degrees and people of influence and a lot of high-powered politicians, but we're still begging for things? You know, we're still begging. I heard the other day where our students are filing a lawsuit that they're not being educated in the New York public schools. How is it this is happening?
Well, what I can tell you that's happening is I don't know how much we're begging, my brother. I mean, I think that we're being respected more than ever before right now. Reparations, the bill H.R. 40 has 169 sponsors, had 173 in the previous Congress, never had more than 50. It has sponsors in the Senate. I mean, these are people that are getting on board. And we're pushing it very hard. And there's every indication that I would say within the next 3 months, H.R. 40 is either going to pass the House of Representatives. It will pass the House of Representatives. The question is on the Senate side. And there is every indication that if it does not pass the Senate because of this segregationist Jim Crow law rule, that President Biden will enact it by executive order. So we're not begging, my brother. We've been pushing it. We've been fighting. We've been moving for years and years and years. And so it's going to happen. We're gonna have a bill that talks about reparations proposals, and not if reparations should be paid, but in what forms, and putting the full weight of the federal government behind it. And beyond that, Evanston, Illinois, on March 22nd, is about to allocate the first of $10 million around housing discrimination to people. So my point is, we sometimes are so used to losing that we can't claim victory. We are winning the struggle for reparations. We are not begging. We're using our power as a way of moving it forward.
But it shouldn't take that much, because like the other.
Well, but it did. I mean, I don't care what it took. We're here. We're here. We're on the prefaces of moving something. Queen Mother Moore was my mentor. She's looking down, smiling. Callie House, Dr. Conrad Worrell. We are on. The struggle is not over. We are still going to have to push hard to make sure that it goes the way we want to do it. But look, my brother, I'm out of time, but we can continue to talk about it. Reparations is on fire in a way that I have never, ever seen in my life, and it's because of the work that's been put in. All right, okay, well, this will do our show for this week. We're going to pick up the news coming in right now. Next week, we'll have another edition of Vantage Point, and we'll have another phenomenal Black woman for Women's History Month. This is Professor. We'll see you again next week on Vantage Point. Time is truly wasted.